Virginia, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Wick. Horse racing, trending topic, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
There we go, we're back. Let me take a sip of this, if you don't mind. I don't think I would have mentioned it. Maybe I did yesterday. Every winter when we're down at Tampa, I had found, I guess, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I found a really nice little roadside stand around Tarpon Springs, sort of between Tarpon. Where was I staying? Tarpon and... what's the town with the bridge? And I found that great barbecue joint, Roberts. But I found this great stand, and they had Tupelo honey. And so I brought some home, and then the next year, you know, we were starting to run low, and so I got the funny thing about Tupelo honey, doesn't come from Mississippi; it comes from Florida, and from a very narrow band in Florida, sort of like central, I guess. And so this past year, Andy Sterling is big for honey. He loves honey. He uses honey as a sweetener for whatever. And so I brought him one, you know. So I had one here in the house and one that I brought to Andy's. I gave Andy, at the beginning of Saratoga, I brought him his jar of Tupelo honey. So I went the other night when I started to get sick, I was up in the middle of the night, and I went looking for her. I didn't want to make too much noise, wake Tina up, but I'm going through the cupboards, and I can't, it's like, where's, this is unbelievable, because there's only like three places it could have been. So I'm looking and looking and looking. No Tupelo, I can't find it. So I happened to say to Tina, as she was walking out the door, I said, "Hun, I want to make tea. Where's that jar of honey?" "Oh, I brought it to school. Brought it to school." "Okay, thanks." So, yeah, that's, well, and of course, the Tupelo honey, the song obviously popularized it, but Uli's Gold, if you've never seen it, Uli's Gold, the great Peter Fonda vehicle, really good, really good. This is also, you know, frankly, Tina said, by the way, it's not just me. Tina got sick too. So I'm, and it's my fault. It's not the grandchildren's fault that landed this predicament. It's my fault that she's sick. I didn't really understand that rationale, but yeah, so she's sick too, and we were going to, this is another ridiculous aside. The other day, maybe like 2 weeks ago, I was at the grocery store, and they were like giving turkeys away. Like 79 cents a pound for a nice, that was a Shady, I want to say Shady Grove, which I've bought. I remember buying a fresh one of theirs for Thanksgiving 1 year. And I was happy with it. So I see this 16-pound bird for like $14 and change. I said, "Well, this is ridiculous." I said, "I got to buy this. I mean, I'll keep it in the freezer or whatever." So that led to reading a piece in advance of Thanksgiving. And you know, you will certainly look forward to having Neil join us. And having our annual Thanksgiving conversation. But, you know, my philosophy that you introduce one new dish every year to the Thanksgiving table. And if it's a hit, you know, you add it to the repertoire, to the menu. And recent years we've done some interesting things that had varied degrees of success. Sweet potato pie, which I had never made. I had never made a sweet potato pie. That became a hit. So that's become a regular. I tried a sweet corn pie one year. That did not go over that great. And, well, the au gratin, we started doing au gratin, and now nobody even wants mashed potatoes anymore. The au gratin's so big. Then there was that crazy Thanksgiving that Hanukkah was running at the same time. So we had latkes on the Thanksgiving table. And I get requests. Are we going to have potato pancakes this year? I also make zucchini potato pancakes sometimes for... Anyway, so I took the turkey Sunday night when we got back from Rochester. I took the turkey out of the freezer and I put it in the fridge to thaw. And I said, "You know what?" Tina got all excited. She said, "Let's have you know." So I was going to do a little some experimentation. And there is no way, I can tell you now, there is no way I'm going through that hoop jump this afternoon, which is what I had planned originally. I was going to throw the turkey in after show, and no way. So that's going to have to wait until tomorrow, I think. But I will, I think I found a new green bean recipe. I got a tremendous book. You know, by the way, Andy yesterday, if you were listening to the replay this morning, Andy, you know, giving me the business, because Andy reads like a book a week. I my schedule, and I'm sure he'll say he's just as busy, but he's a voracious reader. And I read a lot of horse stuff, and I read a lot of food stuff. And the last two or three books I've read, including one from the University of Kentucky Press, which I'm going to forget the title, but it basically tracks kitchen staff from slavery and how influential those cooks and chefs were, and what basically emanated from there, tied to the flame. I think is the name of the book. It's from the University of Kentucky Press, and then I also got a cookbook which has got a lot of verbiage in it, called Jubilee, which is basically a collection of African American recipes handed down, which is just tremendous. There's a green bean I'm going to try this weekend that looks very good with tomato, diced tomatoes, and might have a little bit of a spice to it. Oh, I tried last year. We tried, or the year before. I think the last 2 years I've made a red rice, a Spanish rice kind of a thing from Mrs. Wilkes in Savannah as an option. And I think I asked Dina, I said, didn't you like that? She said, couldn't remember it. So anyway, so I'm in the planning stages for Thanksgiving. I take it very seriously. And also, seeing as how that topic came up, let me send out best wishes to Johnny. Johnny's been kind of concentrating on, he had replacement surgery, hip replacement surgery, and I checked in with him. I thought it was this week. I thought it was actually like today, tomorrow, Friday. But he said it was actually Tuesday. And so send Johnny, if you see Johnny on Twitter, send him a best wish for a speedy recovery. Get him back on. Probably too late to rehab for golf. Although Johnny's famous for playing on New Year's Day. He's one of those golfers that likes to be able to say they played on New Year's Day or, right, New Year's Eve. If the weather cooperates, that's a funny aside. Thank you, Leslie. Good job, Leslie. Our friend Leslie Knopf, one of the interactive partners for moments like this. Port Richey and New Port Richey. How did you remember that, Leslie? Good job. Yeah. And also, actually, looking at that, it reminds me, too. Let me also, I think I mentioned it in passing the other day, getting ready to put together this year's At the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion. Year 3 of the Betting Companion, and all of your favorites are seemingly lining up. I'm not speaking out of turn, but Scully and Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad, Hammer, Nick Tamaro, Seth Merrow, Joe Bianca, and me. We each take 2 races, and we'll try to get you through Breeders' Cup with some good ideas. The first year, the 2 years ago, the 2020, we had a very, very strong. Last year, most of us got a little stymied, so looking to rebound and have a good Breeders' Cup. I mentioned, speaking of which, I'm in the process of getting organized on that front, there's too many races now. So I started with the juveniles, and your resources include, if you're trying to track fields ahead of next week, you can start at Breeders' Cup, the section at DRF, certainly, and the team is got their finger on the pulse of who's coming and who's not, so you can start there. And the Breeders' Cup website itself too has got the one problem with it is it puts all the horses that won Win in Your Inns, and you know, that's over the course of the whole, you know, the whole year almost. So, in a lot of cases, there's some extraneous horses that are listed that end up not entering. Those are your two immediate tracking devices. And, of course, the DRF section, you know, you also got David Aragona made the morning line for the Friday card, and Brad Free does it for the Saturday card. So the juvenile, in fact, here, I've got a couple of minutes until Tony joins us. The juvenile, where right now David made Cave Rock even money, which makes sense. Forte, 4-1. Now here's the first of the Chad Browns we'll mention, Blazing Sevens out of the Champagne. Baffert's got that second horse that sort of bubbled to the surface out of the American Pharoah. National Treasure might be okay. Verifying for Brad Cox. And these are Forte, 4-1, Blazing Sevens, 8-1, National Treasure, 8-1, Verifying, 10-1. Curly Jack, who, of course, upset at Churchill in September for Tom Amos, 15-1. Lost Ark, who's apparently iffy for Pletcher, 15-1. Red Root 1 for Steve Asmussen, 20-1. Awesome Strong, George Delgado. And Congruent, Antonio Sano. So it doesn't look like it's going to be a... They're not coming out of the woodwork to run against, you know, Cave Rock and Forte and Blazing Sevens too. So top three seem pretty distinct. And of course, the argument could be made certainly on Friday. Cave Rock will be the shortest, you know, price, and we'll see about Flight Line on Saturday. The Juvenile Fillies group, it looks like this is going to be a little bit more wide open and well entered. Chocolate Gelato 7-2 right now. Chop Chop 9-2 for Cox. Wonder Wheel coming out of the Alcibiades 5-1. Raging Sea for Chad. See, there's one. You know, Chad's got one major player in all of these. You know, and Tell Me No Lies. There's actually a couple of horses that are going to come up that I'm going to mention that. You know how this works as the season goes in the summer, especially with the two-year-olds. The horse sort of bubbles to the surface, and you saw a race of theirs that just sticks in your mind. And I'll get, on the Philly juvenile Philly turf, there's one that I think is going to be a price that I'm going to be hard-pressed not to feature prominently. You're My Girl, John Terranova, as mentioned. 8-1, Atomically for Todd, 12-1. Grand Love for Asmussen, who was, what, second to Chop Chop in, was that it? Chop Chop, not Chop Chop. Who was it that, it was second to the McPeak. It was second to the McPeak at Churchill. Leave No Trace for Phil Serpy. Smiling Phil. Uncontrollable looks like a starter in the juvenile fillies for Michael McCarthy. And then there's a nice 6, 7, 8 possibles, including American Rocket and Back to Ohio. Hoosier Philly, who you know about. Hoosier Philly flashed to the surface for Amos, and you were out on the lead with Hoosier Philly. Ice Dancing, Satin Doll, Shoplifter, Showgirl Lynn B., and Zagara. So it looks like a nice full field, and the juvenile fillies feels competitive. The boys' turf, and we continue to monitor what's going on abroad, because this has typically been a race, as Nick and I talked about a couple. Last Monday? Silver Knot, Charlie Appleby, obviously, and the winner is for Catman, who we talked about. I'm Very Busy for Chad. He's also got Oxymore, but I'm Very Busy, the shorter of the two. Holloway Boy, Carl Burke, coming in. The horse that I'm referring to, Jeff Mullins, that packs a wallop. Go back and watch that Zuma Beach. Didn't get a chance to talk to Jeff, but I was really impressed. I think that's a serious horse, packs a wallop. 8-1 on David's morning line. Major Dude for Todd, 10-1. I mentioned Oxymoor, Dubai Mile coming in from abroad, 12-1. Web Slinger, the Cassie told you about, the one of the two DJ runners. And Graham weighing options for Nagarok. And feels like he's going to stretch him out in this, in the Juvie. And then there's another 7 or 8. Auguste Rodin, Battle of Normandy, Sharon, Curly Larry and Moe from the weekend. James is a nice pop. Lachaise, really good, and Reckoning Force are being considered. So nice, seems like a nice group for the boys. On the girls' side, and this has been, you know, this has been the province of, you know, North America since its inception. I think only, what did we come up with Nick last week? I think only two international winners in the juvenile filly turf. But Chris Head has got Blue Rose and Jonathan Thomas, Delight. Here's Chad with Free Look. Shug, we talked about, obviously, with Pleasant Passage the other day. Phil D'Amato, that Comanche Country out of the Surfer Girl. G. Laurie for Graham. Graham Motion has really come running this fall. Knock Your Socks Off for Chris Block. Last Call out of Woodbine for Kevin Attard. Basil Martini, Joseph O'Brien. That Showgirl Lynn B, I mentioned, for potentially for the dirt, but also being considered for the grass for Bob Hess, and I guess would run here if she can get in. And then another 5 or 6. Alluring Angel, Barefoot Angel, Be Your Best Bling, and Cairo Consort. And then, of course, the sprint, which we've talked about. It's funny. As I don't want to call it marginal, but, you know, it is sort of a sidebar Breeders' Cup event, the Juvenile Turf Sprint. The Platinum Queen is certainly going to be the engine on this train. Love Reigns for Wesley Ward. Richard Fahey, of course, for Platinum Queen. Rafe Beckett, Lazoo. Richard Hannon, Persian Force. And then some more North American interests, like Speedboat Beach, who just did not, you know, just didn't, looked okay winning, that, you know, move, making that move to grass. But, I mean, long term, will is a dirt horse, but certainly the Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman team, they're pretty well covered in the juvenile, I would think, with Cave Rock. So they're looking at a score here. And then there's the one of those great stories that, you know, seems to be coming. There's a couple of them in this race, potentially. And we talked to two of them, Tim Martin with Tyler's Tribe. It's going to be a middle price in there. He's going to be 8-10-1, and maybe the fastest of all these. Nagarok is mentioned, but it's kind of, you kind of got the sense that Graham is thinking the two-turn race. Private Creed for Steve Asmussen, Gaslight Dancer for Maker, and then that other fun story, American Apple, who came to New York to win the Futurity for Dan Leach. And there's a gaggle, an absolute gaggle, being considered for this. This thing will end up being way oversubscribed. So, the juvenile tour. So there's a quick, kind of a quick glance ahead. Just get familiar with the names. Try to get as much familiarity with, you know, where they're coming from, and you know, even watching races, particularly the Euros, if you didn't see them, you know, over the last month, 6 weeks. So, all right. Takes us to the top of the hour, and we already took that early break. So, Case, let's get Tony. And I don't know if Tony had a chance to see that incident that I talked about the other day. The rather how do you phrase Mikel Sanchez? I don't want to call him problematic. That's not fair. But you know, certainly a jock whose name has come up, you know, at least once too often in regards to some bad decision making. But you know, that incident the other day, I couldn't really tell it sure didn't feel like he was, you know, steering that horse you know, off the rail. It kind of, you know, bolted and then set off a chain reaction. And stewards took no action. So, yeah, that's a topic that just doesn't ever go away, which is the regular ignoring of problems early in a race, and then the, you know, sort of eye rolling response. Well, the horse had the whole rest of the race to. What are you talking about? You know, if a horse is compromised early, you know, especially if it, you know, okay, if it's a horse that's going to drop out of it and come with a run, that's one thing. Not that mitigates the circumstance, but yeah, you know, if a horse that wants to be forward and wants to gain position and gets compromised, gets, you know, pushed out into the eight path. In a scrum, or get sawed off at the beginning of a race, well, they had plenty of time to... No, they didn't have plenty of time to do anything. It's just ridiculous. That when I hear that one, it's like, you got to be kidding. So, all right. Well, I was going to say, I just saw Casey, you know, popped up on the phone, but he popped up to say that Tony... Wow, Tony's not bad. This is going beautifully. We don't, it doesn't happen but a couple times a year, actually. Right? It's an inexact science, the scheduling of the guests. You know, when you... I mean, I just... Yesterday, I said, all right. Ed Martin and Hegarty and so forth with the, you know, hour one. I figured we've got tons to talk about. All right, let's see if he... Sometimes Tony will... oh, he's there, Case. He's actually available. Yeah, try him again. He just texted me. All right, so we will have Tony Black. And Tony can discuss this. I mean, he certainly had enough, especially somebody like Tony who, you know, not the all of his winners, but, you know, a lot of his winners came on the front end. So, you know, if you get bounced around at the beginning of a race, you know, it's funny. There was not only that, there was that race from Philly. Was that Monday? And then there was a similar incident at, well, where was it? At Kempton? There was. That's one of the fun things and valuable things about Twitter, when it's valuable, the, you know, being made aware of, you know, certain things that, you know, might have taken a lot more time to come to light, or, you know, to be made aware of, and you instantaneously. They had a very similar, fairly similar situation. A horse coming out of the gate and absolutely taking a left turn and stacking up three horses on the inside. So I don't know. I want, here we go. I let me, huh? All right. Okay. So let me see if I can't, there we go. Happy to get Tony in with us, and here, Tony, look at me 1 second, and there we go. Tony Black, good morning.
I'm listening to you this morning, Steve, and I can't agree anymore. I can't agree more with you, what you're saying. The early stages of the race, eliminating a horse or compromising his position, especially a speed position that a horse likes to be in a strategical position, when you compromise that, leaving the gate or in the first, let's say, eighth of mile of the race, that's more important than when a horse gets bothered in the later stages of the race. You can determine in the later stages of the race. Like, let's say somewhere's down the stretch where a horse might get compromised in his forward position. You can come to a conclusion and say, well, he wasn't going to beat that horse anyway, or you know, it's easier to determine in the late stages of the race. Leaving there, when you compromise that speed horse's position, leaving there a horse that likes its position, like, let's say, to be on the outside or, you know, something like that, and you take that away from him, his strong point away from him, yeah, you know, it's hard to say, well, he wasn't going to be effective or he wasn't going to win anyway. That's hard for stewards to say, but they do that sometimes. But, you know, I do like, though, when they say in the later stages of the race, stewards say, well, he might have been compromised, but he wasn't going to win anyway. I like that because there are times, you know, you can penalize the jock, but don't penalize the owner and the horse's position by taking the owner's win away from him. And it was just a jock, what can we say, trying too hard, but he, you know, and he might have done something that you know, caused some interference for a horse that was insignificant or a horse that wasn't going to win anyway, you know, and they leave the number up. That I really totally agree with. But that has to occur in the later stages of the race, not leaving the gate.
Well, historically, Tony, if you go back to the, you know, let's go back to the beginning of your career. So we're talking 50 years worth of racing from 1970.
Yeah.
Has that ever changed much at all? And was there ever a time where the stewards were more aggressive or cognizant or responsive to early trouble and incidents out of the gate or in the first turn?
You know, it kind of goes with who were the three stewards at the time. And, yeah, there were stewards I rode under that would say in the early stages, no, it didn't cost you anything. You had plenty of time to make it up. And then there was stewards that I rode under that said, yeah, we understand it cost you a position that you would have liked to be in. Yeah, we understand. Or, yeah, they maybe made a change in the order of finish. You know, the stewards, I mean, you were dealing over the years. I mean, I've ridden under stewards that were considered real tough. Like names come to hand, like, oh, Mr. Palmer. He was one of the ones that was one of the toughest, you know, they said. But you know what? He would listen. If you had a legitimate excuse, they would, you know, consider what you had to say. But, you know, riders bring it upon themselves sometimes to come in there with these BS excuses. And it was really them controlling the situation or them that caused the situation. You know, I always like to go to movies and listen to some of the BS. And you know who was going to say, yeah, I did come in or I came out. Yeah, I should have quit hitting left-handed. And then there was the guys that went in there and the excuse that was always used, well, my horse attempted to change leads or he changed leads at that point. I couldn't correct him. He changed leads in midair. He dropped in. No. You caused him to drop in. And then a lot of times they would make these excuses up and the horse never changed leads. So what are you talking about? You know, it's just an excuse they heard. It sounded good, but the film did not back that excuse up, you know. And then, you know, there was riders that went in there. I mean, I went in there and I've done my share of stupid things or overly aggressive things. And I got to the point where I say, that was I crossed the line, or no, I was well within what was accepted. And, you know, I can remember one particular incident that I think sometimes they judge you as a rider or you're too aggressive or you're aggressive. I got taken down one day and it happened to be on, I think I told this story, of course, it happened to be on a lawyer's horse, Richie Phillips, horse. I said, that should have never come down, Richie. And Richie said, well, let's appeal it. I said, well, they're going to give me days. They gave me days, you know. He said, well, let's appeal it. Appeal the days. Well, appeal the disqualification. I said, I was clear, whatever, right? They're saying I did. I was clear when I did it. Do you know we had the number put back up and the purse redistributed, of course, you know, and I didn't serve the days. But, the betters got the raw end of that,
right.
You know, because that's a sad situation too. When stewards make a determination and it's not correct, but you know, being in that position, stewards are under the gun for whatever decision they make. You know, they're always affecting one side or the other. The guy that bet on the horse, the guy that got put up. You know, the owner that owned the horse, the owner that got taken down, the owner that got put up, and they're always going to be criticized. But if they have the experience to know what they're actually looking at, and they know, you know, of course you got to know the riders, but you're not judging a rider on his past performance or what he did in the past. You have to judge him on what is presently happening, you know. And they can come up with fair decisions. But, you know, steward stands aren't known to have people in them all the time that have ridden these horses or understand at times what it is to ride a horse. And I'm not saying you have to have a steward has to have ridden races to be an effective steward. No, there are stewards that really, you know, I've ridden under that never sat on a horse, and they do a great job. And then there are stewards that, you know, I've ridden under, and I can't count the number of stewards I've ridden under. You know, I went to Chicago one year, and I think I told this story too. I went to Chicago one year, and it was a, the stewards, before I rode the first race there, called me in. They said, we know how you ride, and it's not going to fly here. So, you know, you cross the line, you're going to be watching the races. You ain't going to be riding them. The first thing that came up was going into the 3/8 pole, and I'll never forget this. Some guys got bothered, and, of course, they called me in. I think I finished second in the race. I think they, I don't know if they took the number down or whatever. They called me in, and they said, we told you. We already warned you. That's not going to happen. You caused interference at the 3/8 pole. I said, no, it wasn't me. I was the outside horse. I left plenty of room. They said, well, we don't have an exact view of it, but we know how you ride. You know who stood up and said, and he was well-respected, I'll never forget it. Pat Day was in the movies that day. He says, Judge, I was behind the incident. Black didn't cause any of the interference, not any of it. And, you know, and they were looking to set me down like more than 5 or 7 days. And he said he didn't cause any of the interference. The video doesn't show it. You know, it's at a point where it doesn't show. But I was behind him. I never forgot when Pat Day stood up and told him that, because he never said he was going to say anything. He was just at the movies. And I thought, boy, you know what? There are really honorable people, incredible people out there that perform in this business, whether it's trainers, jockeys, whatever. And it really gave me such a positive impression of a guy that's such a strong competitor like Pat Day was. And I thought, man, what a class act. So to this day, I respect him and always did respect him, but respect him for him, you know, pulling me out of the fire, pulling my butt out of the fire, because I know they were looking to hammer me.
Hmm. Well, that brings to mind, you know, a couple of incidents or circumstances where, frankly, the stewards, I don't want to say, I guess credibility is probably the right word. Their credibility can be called into question. And Chris Pasch told a story years ago with us. Was it Chris Pasch or was it Speckert? I think it was Chris Pasch told a story that was just astounding. You know, a steward bringing something up. I remember you from, you know, from that fight 20 years ago. What are you talking about? He told that story, Chris did, on the show. And I was, cause this was a DQ. In fact, there's two DQs in that regard of a horse that just like you said, Tony, that absolutely was going to win. And the horse that they passed and brushed, essentially, was pretty much finished. And there was no, you know, there may have been some contact that was incidental, but it the horse that was being beaten in this case, it didn't have any influence on the result. And
yeah.
two horses taken down. One very famously, because we were on the air, for the Black Eyed Susan, when the stewards at Pimlico disqualified Norberto Arroyo and put up Ramon. And if it had been the inverse, if Ramon had been you know, on the horse brushing by, they never would have taken him down. It was so obvious what was involved, and the preconceived notion of you know, Arroyo in that particular case. That was a filly named Smart and Pretty, I want to say, who ended up getting sick and dying later in the year and had that victory taken away from her. And then the same thing with, I'm pretty sure it was Chris Pasch, same thing, horse, I think, coming down the hill. and absolutely blew by a horse and was lugging in a little bit. And they took her down. It was insane. I mean, she won by 14 lengths and passed the horse like a hobo in a freight yard.
Yeah, you know, they're the kind of disqualifications. I mean, they're really made just on the rule, but the rule doesn't take into consideration things of that nature. You know, you weren't going to win anyway. He bothered a horse that was, or he brushed a horse that was dead, or he won by more lengths than anybody could have ever made up on him. And that's usually in the latter stages of a race. And they should take that in consideration. I've seen now in this day and age where that is done. But in the past, I've seen where, oh, well, you know what? You came over. We're not talking about what that horse was going to finish, and they would take you down. You know, it's changed more dramatically now than what it was. I think you got to understand there was a point in time where there wasn't any videos or film patrol. I can remember it was the film patrol. Yeah. and before that, it was just patrol judges in strategic positions, quarter pole, you know, three ace pole, three quarter pole, you know, leaving the gate, and they'd have three or four patrol judge stands, and the stewards probably only had that patrol judge's opinion to go on. But in this day and age, you know, you got better video coverage, you've got patrol judges. I'll tell you the truth, I think they've almost gotten to where some tracks you don't even see the patrol judges out there. You know, it's amazing. Everybody had a patrol judge at the quarter pole. I've been to tracks where I've seen, well, where's the patrol judge at the quarter pole? Or at the three ace pole, where he could, if there's any spots in the video, the film, the camera, whatever right. You want to call it, he could clear up those blank spots, you know, say, no, you know, he stayed out, or no, he did come in as the camera was changing view. He did come in, and yeah, that horse was up against the fence, and he took his room away from him. And the patrol judge would have some bearing, quite a lot of bearing on it. But you know what? A lot has changed, and they are using more common sense in this day and age. And also, I don't just say it's because they are getting updated with the, with judging these races, are more up to date and understanding. I think a lot of it is because years ago, it was unheard of for a jock to appeal a daze, you know, a suspension or a disqualification. It was unheard of. You know, I'm talking like I watched races and my uncle rode in the 50s and the 60s. That was unheard of. You know, no lawyer came to and said, well, we're going to take this to an appeal, or a jock said, I'm going to appeal my days. And of course, you appealed them to the stewards. If the stewards didn't agree with your argument, then you took it to the commission. Then if the commission upheld the stewards, like when I appealed that disqualification, of course, the stewards said, no, this is why we took the number down. We took it to the commission. The commission said, we don't agree with this. You know, you had plenty of room to do what you did. And they put the number back up. If the commission didn't do that, you can take them to civil court and have the case heard in front of a judge who probably knows nothing about horse racing. And maybe you'll win there. So lawyers have changed the stewards, maybe the stewards to some degree, their thinking to be, they better be more fair, and they better not take into account, well, this jock rides this or this jock rides like that. Or whatever, you know, they better just try to view it with open mind, open eyes, and be fair. And in this business, sometimes, you know, you get attitudes and you get personalities, and sometimes fairness is compromised because of attitudes and personalities. But yep. I think the stewards, basically, a lot of times they do a good job. The only thing is, there should be one steward. And, that, you know, this is like self-serving. So, you know, I say this. There should be one steward that had a riding experience in every steward stand. But that kind of sounds like it's self-serving, doesn't it? When I say that.
I don't disagree. I mean, that's been, you know, this has been discussed. You know
what gets me? This is what gets me, Steve. You could be a jock's agent and have a better shot of being a steward. You could be taking entries in the office and have a better shot than being a steward in most racetracks. And you could be a jock that rode for 20 years and have very little shot of being a steward. it's kind of demeaning when it comes to what is thought about the mental capabilities of jockeys. Not saying that over the years jockeys have earned that opinion of them, but you know what? There's a lot of jocks that were out there. You know, I couldn't mention names. You know, that made good stewards. Jimmy Edwards, you know, he rode for many years.
Sure.
Bunch of other guys. They make good stewards because they not only have the respect of the riding colony, they have the experience to know what they're looking at when they see what a jock is doing on that horse's back. You know, when they see what he's doing with his body, what he's doing with his head, what he's turning, you know, what is he looking for? And they'll say, well, yeah, you know, when you do something like that, you're usually, doing it to compromise an opponent's position, or you saw him coming, but it was too late. Now, they know what they're looking at. Or you saw him coming and got over before he got there. You know, they know. But it's not that it's hard to say that every steward stand should have a jock, because maybe some of the jocks couldn't do the job. Maybe some of the jocks wouldn't want to do the job. And maybe some of the jocks, even if they did do the job, wouldn't have done a good job at it. But they should at least try to put someone with riding experience, one person with riding experience in a steward's position.
And listen, that you would think that's, you know, that's obvious. The other problem is that, and again, I haven't sat in a room, so this is probably, you know, strictly speculative, but there's invariably, Tony, you know, allegiances that seem to form, and there's certain stewards are going to always, right? They're going to always vote with, you know, steward B is always going to side with steward A, and so you got one guy kind of running roughshod over the decisions.
Well, that's what happened, and exactly what happened in the case that I was speaking of that involved me in getting the number back up. The one steward was a retired trainer that became a steward, didn't really like me and didn't really like my uncle. I think my uncle, he rode in the areas that he trained in. And of course, I had people that liked me because they liked my aggressive style of riding. And there was the people that received some of my aggressive performances that didn't like me. So he was one of those guys that didn't like me, and he run roughshod over, and his main backer was the owner of the racetrack at the time. And he ran roughshod over, and I'm not going to say over, a retired trainer turned steward, but he was in the latter stages of his life and career. And he kind of run roughshod over him and just intimidated him easy in going in seeing things his way. And the only other steward was a younger guy that after they took the number down and after I got the days, asked me what I was going to do. And he told me what happened in the steward stand. And he was a guy that was very capable and had his own opinion. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to take it on the chin, take the day. His number shouldn't have come down. And he come to me, and he was one of the, I think he was state steward at that time. He told me what happened, and he said, I wouldn't. That's why I appealed it. And that's why, of course, Richie Phillips was the owner of the horse. He was a pretty good lawyer. He was the National League umpire's representative.
Of course. Of course he was.
And he had a lot of respect for me, I guess, you know, because I said, that shouldn't have come down, Richie. And he said, well, we're going to appeal it. And we won it.
I love it. No, Tony, I'm glad this, we didn't specifically talk about what transpired with Mikel Sanchez the other day, where his horse kind of veered off the rail fairly early. He was like in the 1.5 path, and he caused kind of a chain reaction, but it didn't look like he actually did anything. It's like the horse kind of bolted a little bit, and then he corrected him as quickly as he could. So people are going to beat up on him over his idiotic, you know, his gambling circumstance that found him suspended, which obviously, calls into question his judgment. But It has that same topic essentially that we that we ran with because it happened early on, and there wasn't even the one thing that was surprising is that they didn't even bother with an inquiry. I mean, at least take a look at it and see let the players know that you have an interest.
Right. You know, I've asked them on previous occasions, why are there never inquiries? And the answer I got, we don't want to falsely upset or put an inquiry up and the public react to it. You know, we don't want to give them we don't want them to have to react to something that's negative. I said, yeah, but you know what? Inquiries are something that are effective in monitoring and showing your authority in this race. Inquiries are there for a reason. It doesn't say it's you're guilty and you want to take down. It's going to show you know what you're looking at, and you're looking at it, and it gives the other side a chance to understand, geez, we're not up there asleep. You know, we're up there doing something. And I don't think inquiries really would be terribly negative, have a terrible negative effect on the public. The most they would, maybe there's always going to be somebody that becomes, affected by it, but very few are. They're going to see that you're doing your job. You know what you're looking at. And riders, of course, they see that, you're aware of what's going on out there. And when it comes to Michael, he's going to be subjected. And it's self-inflicted. He's going to be subjected to a lot of negative criticism no matter what it is. It's going to take him time to outgrow that negative response that he's going to get because of his poor judgment that has nothing to do with what is going on in present day. But you know what? That's the nature of the business. And like I told you, when I first started riding, my uncle, who had a 20-year career, and he sampled meters and was well-respected at all the racetracks, he told me, he didn't tell me a whole lot about being a jockey, about riding, actually crossing my reins and putting a leg on each side. But he told me, the one thing you better do in this business is keep your reputation, keep it clean, And I thought that was just a lot, nothing at the time. But after years and being riding for 40 years, which I rode twice as many years as he rode, but after riding competitively on a daily basis 40 years, I understood, maybe not the latter stage, in mid stages of my career, what he meant. You better keep your reputation clean. And, there were situations that I could have been negatively judged by that I wasn't, only because I wasn't. Maybe I wasn't a lily white jockey that walked out of the jock's room every day, but I had a pretty good reputation. And when there was controversial things going on or there was some scandals that involved, at that time, race fixing and different things that went on in different jocks rooms in this East Coast area. When I was questioned or when I did have to appear before the New Jersey grand jury, I had enough of a reputation where people weren't looking at me in a real negative light, which I appreciated that. When it came down, I'll never forget the grand jury foreman came out, and I had taken a lawyer with me, but I didn't have to consult him or anything. He came out and he said to my lawyer, he says, "You either represent an angel or the best lawyer we've had in front of us." Exact words. I never forgot them.
That's
Steve.
Great. So, that's great. But
I guess I'm an angel, huh, Steve?
That's what they exactly, absolutely are. Tony, this was terrific. Right. This was great. Thank you.
All right, you take care. Keep up the good work. I appreciate all you do for racing. And, brother, I love you, brother.
Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody, absolutely the best. And that was interesting. And that's a topic that is a little maddening. And certainly, when it comes to those of us that are betting on these races, I'm sure there's a few stewards listening. Don't worry about us, being upset that you're looking. I mean, we want you to look at the race. Yeah, that's the whole point. We're much more annoyed, you know, with quick official, as they call it. I mean, you know, if we're seeing it, you should be looking at it, right? Well, that's my thinking. We're about halfway in, and Sean Clancy is going to join us, and it is always a pleasure not just to talk to Sean, but to congratulate him on a win on the big stage at Far Hills on Saturday, River D, and they'll be in action again this weekend at Great Meadow. Sean, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Steve. Good morning. We had a big day, and yeah, they ran the races without you. I know where it was touch and go, but they went ahead and ran Far Hills without Steve Bick in the house.
Jump
right in there.
This is a sobering reminder. Exactly right. It looked like an absolutely fabulous day, and you know, these stories write themselves, Sean, and you know, for you and Tom Law and for your brother, you know, when you go to put things up at Saratoga Special or This Is Horse Racing, and over the years, the Steeplechase Times, when you have a story like Shark Hanlon and his son Patty and this $900 horse, and fold in the incredibly sad story involving the Bromhead son, Jack. Shark said it on Monday. He said this should be a movie.
Yeah, look, it's just an incredible story. I mean, for a guy, he went to the Gores Bridge horse and training sale, which he called, a lot of people call it a half-bred sale, and he went there to look at one horse, and this horse walked past him, and he just loved his walk, and he remembered Patty Mullins, who was the great patriarch of all the great Mullins dynasty, used to say, if a horse can't walk, he can't run, and he just loved this horse. He went home, the horse was still just on his mind, went back and bought the horse for 850 euros, and it wasn't a quick success story. I mean, I think the horse, he unseated. He lost his rider and fell in his first three starts. Lost his rider once and fell twice in his first three starts. And I think it took him like 14 tries to break his maiden. And then, all of a sudden he started getting good. And now he's won a Galway Plate, a Grand National, and he's aiming for the Cheltenham Gold Cup, which is the biggest race there is in steeplechasing in all the world. So for a horse to be on American soil and then talk about a race like the Cheltenham Gold Cup is just, just doesn't happen. I have to get the history department to even look back at horses ever even, done both back in the early 70s. Those horses went over there. They might have. But it's an incredible story. And his son there, Patty, 15-year-old pony riding kid, he was there. Yeah, they gave a great tribute to Jack de Bromhead, who sadly lost his life at a very young age in a pony race in Ireland, which is just a horrible, horrible tragedy. And, he gave just kind of a tribute to him. And Shark is a wildly, he's a very successful horse trainer, and he's just a wildly open personality and a just a charismatic figure. You have to root for him, and just a lovely guy. As an American steeplechase participant, sometimes it's hard when the Irish or anyone comes over and kind of whips up on us, especially on our biggest day. They were gracious. They appreciated it. They enjoyed it. They respected our sport. And that was comforting in a way that at least they did show great respect for our sport and thoroughly enjoyed themselves. And look, that's what championship days are about. And it was a great day of racing.
Well, the winds other got kind of spread around. In fact, let me just reach for my, there we go. Beside obviously the feature and the Harris to Kerry Breon and Bell Mead Jockey Club and partners, a Champs-Élysées 4-year-old Leger, and the Gladstone, Gordon Elliott. In fact, Gordon Elliott back-to-back winners in the Gladstone and the Foxbrook. You were in the Foxbrook, right? Yeah, you were in the Foxbrook.
Yeah, I ran Awaken in the Foxbrook. I made a mistake there. It rained on the Thursday. I just softened up that ground probably more than most of the American horses are used to or can handle. I ran two American bred horses up there, and I probably shouldn't have run either one of them. A little disappointed in myself that I ran them really once they got that rain on Thursday. That place can get heavy. It's down in the bottom. It can get pretty testing on horses, especially horses that just simply haven't been on that type of ground, all year or at all. So it just lends itself to a European nature, and you can look at, the seven race cards, six Irish breds, one British bred, and they really had their, it worked out. Just, I mean, they were going to be tough anyway. I know that.
Right.
Certainly wouldn't act like it was ground only, but it definitely just swung it a little bit toward the European bred horses. So I made a mistake running probably Awaken and Senior Seville, but I got it right in the last, so that salvaged the day.
I love it.
At least for River Day, I said to Jack Fisher in the paddock, who he'd gotten beat with Proven Innocent, gotten beat with Snap Decision, and I said, come on, Jack, we'll salvage the day here. And he looked at me and said, well, you'll salvage your day, and this might make my day a little better. I said, yeah, exactly. Maybe not a full salvage job after a couple of disappointing runs, but certainly salvage River D's day. So we love winning there. It's a place, everybody in American steeplechasing and now actually in Ireland and other places are pointing for. And, that's where you want to win. So we're lucky to win there this year. We won there last year. And I go all the way back to 1983, riding pony races in 1983 when I was 13 years old. My first ever pony race I won fell off. Pony ran off. The stirrup fell off the saddle. I fell off three strides later and wound up in the hospital with seven stitches in my wrist. And, still going back there trying to recapture the highs and lows of racing all in one day.
The winner, Cool Jet, where'd you find this horse?
He's actually a guy named Pat Boyle, owned the horse in England, and he came highly regarded. Willie Mullins had won a bumper with him, and he was running over there. He had desperate form over there. They wanted to try something different, brought him over here, and he finished second at Foxfield, and I had kind of managed the horse coming over for Pat, and then River D bought into him after the Foxfield race and went to Far Hills. Lasix made a big difference for him, and he just ran great. They took out six fences, which is a rarity in American steeplechasing because of low sun, which happens a lot in Europe. So the race originally meant to have 11 fences. They wound up jumping five, but certainly didn't matter to Cool Jet. Cool horse, and it was fun to get one on the board for sure.
Well, the other winners... Leslie Young, who's had a terrific season. Redisian, an easy winner of the Appleton. With Sean Flanagan. Agiterre, the flat race, the two-mile flat race. Kerry Breon for the Willises and Partners. A Teofilo, five-year-old. Bernie Dalton, easy winner. I got a kick out of Nick Juarez, second with Greg Sacco in here. Had set the pace and almost withstood.
Yeah, that was the maybe the most dichotomous race finish in the history of horse racing, with Bernie Dalton on one side and Nick Juarez on the other. but the old jump jockey got the job done, which that horse was very hard to hold. Bernie had a real handful the whole way. Went roaring up the inside midway through the race and was able to get him back settled and then made a nice run kind of inside to win. Radishian was cool to see him win. Neat horse, been plying his trade at the top of the game. Went, ran in three grade ones this summer, came back a little class relief and won. That was cool. LJ was very good again. Irish bred on soft ground probably helped him, but he's a nice four-year-old. That four-year-old division has been he's won two four-year-old stakes this year. He's had a good year too. Gordonelli came over. He had two horses just primed for that. And Shark Allen and Hewick. I mean, Hewick's rated 167, which would, again, you'd have to go back in the history department. I don't think there's ever been a horse rated that high to run in America. And he proved it. I mean, he walloped our horses, walloped a bunch of other European bred or European, once European based horses like Pistol Whipped and Ass Paddington and those kind of horses. And he decimated them, winning by 11. So it kind of shows where a 167 horse stands in certainly on American soil. Noah and Ark ran a big race. They're just a real overachiever. Todd McKenna is a small trainer. He's done a great job with that horse. The Beswick brothers brought him over, relatively kind of inexpensive horse. He's had a great career, won a Carolina Cup and won a Lonesome Glory and finished second in the Grand National. So, that was cool to see, kind of a little guys, you know, at least competing, at the top of the stage. So that was cool. All in all, just a great day. I think the coverage on Fox Sports was brilliant. Thanks to Naira to getting involved and offering steeplechasing exposure like that. Acacia Courtney, my brother Joe, and the MIG were all on hand. They were, I think they were happy with the show. I think everybody seemed, real excited about the exposure in the day. So, again, it was just it was a real stellar day for American steeplechasing.
Well, and
other than Steve Bick not being there, that was a pall. There was a pall over it, but we managed to just try to pull it off.
So
wasn't
bad.
Easy.
I appreciate you soldiering on. the amount of coverage that Shark Hanlon is getting, he's made all the rounds of all the trades and all the audio and video presentations. He was on with Nick Luck and at the races had him on and so on. And I mean, this is I'm sure the biggest beneficiary of this is Guy Torsiglieri and Far Hills Race Meeting, because it's got to, not that it isn't already, become a target and of interest to the biggest names abroad. This has got to really ignite some people's interest and get them over. I mean, and John said, Hanlon said, he had to reach in his pocket for $30,000 to come over. So
it's expensive, right? Exactly. Yeah. No, it's an expensive adventure. Certainly, when it's when you're doing a round trip ticket over here, it's expensive. A lot of these guys will bring horses over and hope or slash expect to sell them off the race. And I think Gordon Elliott sold at least one, maybe two of his horses. So he certainly sold one. I know one was sold beforehand, and I think the other one was sold after. But I'd have to confirm that. But his objective, when you're coming over and running a $50,000 three-year-old race, you make $30,000 for winning, you kind of do need to sell your horse and make money that way. But for a guy like Shark Hanlon, you spend $30,000 to bring him over and you're going for $150,000 winner share. So you got to get it right. And I talked to Davey Russell, who's an all-time icon of Irish jump jockey, one of the all-time greats, and he had won the two races for Gordon Elliott. And he said, he's like, look, there's pressure coming over here. It's expensive. You got to get the right horses. You can't come over half cocked. We take it very seriously. And that's cool. I mean, again, he's very respectful. And Shark Hanlon absolutely could not have been more gracious with his time, his respect, his graciousness for the day, for our sport. I know he talked to Joe before the race for quite a while on the phone. And then, I talked to him. I interviewed him right after the race. He would have, if I was still asking questions, we'd still be standing there. I mean, he's that welcoming, that respectful of our sport, which sometimes isn't the case. And that's frustrating, for I would say, look, I think one of the greatest things about horse racing is, and I think I've said it on the show, is wherever you go and see horse racing, that is the best version of horse racing that they can put on. And instead of criticizing or knocking it for this, that, and everything else, I mean, you need to stop and look at it and say, wow, look at what these people pulled off. And Far Hills is the best version of racing, not even steeplechasing, just racing that the Far Hills Association you put on that day, on that course. And I think that is very important to remember wherever you go in the world. And I think I think sometimes we get knocking our sport, knocking our product, but if that's the best product you can put on, then that's the best product you can put on, and you should appreciate it. And I think that was very much the case this year from certainly from Shark Hanlon and Davey Russell and and anybody who was at Far Hills.
No, really, really well framed. Excellent. I appreciate that, Sean. And I was so hopeful of getting him on, and like you said, I mean, I sent him a text, and he said, "Absolutely, what time?" And he was great. So
yeah, he's just he just couldn't have been, he could not have been nicer, and he could not have been more respectful. And I just think that it's so important that, you know, they come over and take our money, which is, that's competition, and that's great. And all you ask is that they appreciate it and show the respect that, you know, that we have in our sport. And we know we're not Cheltenham. We know we're not Punches Down. We got that. No one is trying to say that, you know, the Far Hills ranks, you know, up there with Cheltenham. But it is for us. It's our Cheltenham. So,
right.
You know, enjoy it. I think that's really important. And those guys this year did it to it was just, it was really appreciated. And I hope they know that.
Well, the action continues. We're not done yet. And down to Great Meadow, to Virginia, and one of the really great fall races anywhere, the Gold Cup. And you've also got the Grade Two and the Ferguson, and you're going to participate. City Dreamer back.
Yeah, we have two on the, well, we have three. We entered three. We have one on the A's, but City Dreamer comes back. We purposely put him away for the summer. He's 8 years old now. I've taken him to Saratoga 2 years in a row. He couldn't, you know, he hit the board, got some checks, but we just felt like it wasn't fair to take him back up there and try to run him there. So we purposely put him away for the summer. Gave him one training fly race at Chawan Downs. He should be, you know, I think he's certainly ready. Short field, same, almost, you know, two of the four horses that ran in the race in the spring, which was an unfortunate incident, just kind of blew the race up, which was sad for everybody that participated. But, you know, Going Country, City Dreamer, Down Royal comes back, and the new horse from Ireland's there. It was some Pimpernel that Gordon Elliott had sold to G.G. Lazenby's group. So it's a good race, good competitive race. Like always, sure, you wish you had more horses, but I mean, I read a tweet on Twitter and said, you know, what do you, you know, how can, you know, what do you think of a maiden claimer overfilling and the stake only getting four? It's like, what do I think? That is the definition of horse racing. It's very hard to get a good horse, and we're all striving for it, searching for them, trying to discover them and manage them and you know, capture the lightning in a bottle when you get a good horse. And it's very hard to get a good horse, but when you get one, you got to enjoy it, try to manage the horse the right way, and it'll be a good race, hopefully.
On that topic, one of the things that we noticed all summer, particularly with those maiden races at Colonial, and we discussed this with Bill Gallo, there was really a preponderance of young chasers that were, you know, moving into the system. And it seemed to me that there's, you know, a really nice supply chain that was being established. I mean, these are horses that can run till they're 7, 8, 9, 10. So having the kind of numbers you had of particularly of 4-year-olds, yeah, and looking at this maiden race, the two maiden races that start the card on Saturday, you got, let's see, a 6, a 4, a 6, a 6, a 6, a 4, a 4, a 4, a 4, a 4, and an AE for yours, Mission Brief. You know, so it feels like there's an incubator, you know, creating a new generation of potential stars long term.
Well, that's what you hope so. And then I think there has been a great, you know, I think it's obvious there's been an injection of kind of new people and new exposure and new energy in our sport. And you know, it starts with the maidens. And, you know, if you had a perfect world, you would have, you know, you'd have a purse structure and a venue where you could give these maidens more opportunities and on those shorter fields and get them graduating, get them, you know, kind of moving up the system. As I said, it's just hard to get, you know, how many of these maidens are going to go on and be stakes horses. It's just, that's the hard part of horse racing. And that goes for flat racing too. It's not just steeplechasing, but yeah, I mean, there's some strength in the maiden races. And this race at the Gold Cup, they split the maiden. They have 21 horses for a maiden. And then they've got 18 in a high priced maiden claimer. And they actually had a starter maiden that they didn't use. So, the tricky part of our sport is, you know, the opportunity is just that sometimes you get stuck in the maiden ranks and then you look in the allowance and ratings race and stakes horses and you wind up with kind of shorter fields in those races. Some of the timber races are short fields this weekend or a lot of weekends. So, you know, the key is to try to get, yeah, you got to try to, you know, it's the young horses that go on and fill the product later. So, I think that's that. There has been a lot of strength of young horses. Now, if we can, we have to concentrate on giving them more opportunities and more venues and more places to be able to learn how to learn the game, graduate, have safe experiences. So then, yeah, then they can come up to Saratoga and Far Hills and places like that. That's a little easier said than done for a lot of reasons, but that's the objective. Is you can get these horses graduated, get new owners in, get new owners some reward right away. First race, you know, the horse breaks is made in his first couple starts. They get a little money, they get some success, they get a little momentum, and then hopefully they stay in and keep coming back for more. And if you look, like we always talk about, I mean, the you know, if you go through the maiden races this weekend, I mean, their horses, you know, first one's bred by Aga Khan, the second one's at English Channel, you know, third one's by Tappet, bred by Judmont, the fourth one's another Aga Khan horse by Invincible Spirit, another one's by Kitten's Joy, bred by the Ramseys, you know, there's a Maryland bred by Seville, there's a, you know, an Irish horse by Camacho, there's a French bred by Golden Horn, you know, it's there's Tapwood bred by Godolphin, by Tappet out of Better Lucky, you know, there's another Godolphin bred by Frosted out of the Lemon Drop Kid Mare, you know, that's where, I mean, we are, that's the definition of a, you know, thoroughbred racing, and hopefully these horses have found another career that they can thrive in and strive in, and owners are going to enjoy them and they'll be productive. And then, like we always talk about, this is a great segue to the next move, which is, you know, eventing, showing, fox hunting, pleasure riding, or whatever else. There was a horse that won the Field Hunter Championship on the weekend of Virginia Fall. Horse named Forever Bernardini, bred by Live Oak. Mike Trombetta trained him. I bought him for Alicia Murphy to go hurdle racing. He did that okay. He went timber racing, did that okay. And now he wins the Field Hunter Championship for a woman who fox hunts for fun and adores the horse. And, you know, he's got a great life. He's going to continue to have a great life. So that's certainly what steeplechasing and the owners and the participants and the people playing it and all the management and everybody involved takes great pride in. And we will continue to take great pride in that.
Well, the question I was going to round out about Saturday, Andiamo for Leslie Young. Is this why wouldn't he be? Why wouldn't he be a candidate for the Eclipse?
Because he's been running timber racing, so the timber racing is just a very different division as far as.
But why
the Eclipse Awards? It's a good question. I mean, it just always has been. You know, it's just not quite the, you know, it doesn't have the level of, you can put it this way, Andy Amu, and I love Andy Amu, he's an amazing horse. He won 13 races in his life. He's 12 years old. He's 3-for-5 this year, won a Virginia Gold Cup, won a Willowdale Steeplechase, won a Genesee Valley Hunt Cup. But, you know, as far as class goes or ability goes, he wouldn't be close in the Grand National against Hewitt. Now, mind you, he was at one time, and this is a perfect example of what's great about our sport. Andy Amu was a proper grade one hurdle horse. I had to look back if he ever won a grade one, but I know he was competitive in them. He was in Saratoga. I mean, he's just a lovely, really classy hurdle horse. And luckily we have Timber Racing, which goes farther and bigger jumps. And you know, a horse like Andy Amu that loses a step on the over hurdles, then he can step right into Timber Racing. And you look at what he's done in Timber Racing, which is just, it's brilliant to be able to, he's actually second in you want longevity. He was second in the New York Turf Riders Cup in 2016. They've changed the name of the race since then. And he's still going strong. And that's just, you know, it's amazing what he's done. He switched to Timber. He won the Noel Lang, or he was second in the Noel Lang in 2017, which is a hurdle stakes. Switched to Timber in the spring of 2018, and his record is first, second, first. I think he went off course in a DNF. I'm looking at Equivay, second, first. So when he's completed, he's never finished worse than second over Timber. But cool horse, but not real. I mean, if there was a year where there wasn't any stars or something, like a horse like Saluter, you know, I don't know, maybe you get him get a little play. But it's just a totally different division and doesn't really get any Eclipse Award kind of exposure. It shouldn't. It's just another kind of division. And that's not knocking Andy Amu, and it's not knocking any Timber Horses. It's just a very different division. And it doesn't kind of warrant that look as far as Eclipse Awards go.
Fair enough. Because I think this Eclipse is kind of a mess right now, no?
It's tricky. I mean, it's the same old thing. It's like, do you vote for the horse who won, you know, two grade ones during the year, or do you vote for the horse that came over and won one grade one and beat the horse that, you know, it's very typical of a European turf horse that comes over and wins the Breeders' Cup. You know, if you have a horse that's won a couple grade ones and gets beaten the Breeders' Cup turf, which one do you give it to? I mean, Hewick certainly is, if you had to say, he's better than Snap Decision, but you know, it's horse of the year. It's not horse of one race. And, you know, Snap Decision did win two. But that's the constant question. I mean, that's an annual question for the Eclipse voters in the turf divisions where you say, right, do I take a horse like Channel Maker who's won a couple grade ones, or do I take a horse that came over and, you know, won the Breeders' Cup turf? And, that's a good question. I think certainly if Snap Decision only won one grade one, then you say, Hewick won one grade one too. And he should probably get it, but Snap Decision's got two, carried all the way. Disappointing in the Grand National. Certainly if he was second or third, you'd say, he deserves it. So it's different this year for sure. But that, like I said, Steve, this question, Steve was chasing, is absolutely the exact same question that many years, many Eclipse Award voters have when it comes to, a horse that comes over and wins one race on the Breeders' Cup card. And I don't think there's a wrong answer. I mean, it's based on opinion. That's the definition of the Eclipse Award. So, as long as people do the research and work at it and try to come up with, what they think who deserves it, then that's who deserves it. That's what it's based on. And it's, if you want to change the, want to change it, change it. But that's what it is based on, people's opinions. So I don't think there's a wrong opinion.
It's a game.
Except when you abstain, I will say that.
Yeah, that's true with that. That's a burr under the saddle, say the least. Sean, I appreciate it, and good luck this weekend again at Great Meadow.
Thank you very much, and as always, thanks for the exposure for our sport. And hopefully, we'll talk to you in a few weeks. I guess you get Joe next and Tom Law, and then circle back to me at some stage.
Well, we'll get some Breeders' Cup opinions from all three of you. I guess what? Well, I guess you both get to go to Maryland Million Saturday.
Yeah, I'll be at the Gold Cup. Joe will be at the Maryland Million, and I don't know where Tom will be actually.
He's going to be kayaking.
He's probably running some trail race in Vermont. He's probably doing a kayak, mountain climbing, exactly. Trail running, athlon, beer drinking, extravaganza.
Exactly. Exactly.
He deserves.
Unbelievable. This is horseracing.com, of course. since Saratoga Special is on hiatus. Sean, thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
Sean Clancy, everybody. And there you go. Hour two in the books. And we'll come back with hour three. We're going to get a visit in with Dale Day. We'll go down to Oklahoma City. Get excited about the Oklahoma Classics card tomorrow. It's a good card. There'll be a couple of short-priced winners, but there's some prices to be discovered. I retweeted Marty and Andy with the scratches at Keeneland and at Aqueduct. Look fairly clear. And we'll maybe hopefully get some opinions in with Rich Ang before the end of the day as well. Dave Hill is going to join us. And I was right. Dave took his first. He took his first, not a collar, but he did have his first down week. And he actually wrote about how there's been this narrowing in the point spreads, and not in the spreads, but in the actual results in terms of win differential. How it's the lowest it's been in however long. And it's making these games very tight and difficult to pick. I've maintained this, regarding the sports betting that everybody's going to gravitate away from horses. No, they're not. They're going to discover how difficult it is to win consistently betting sports. Not easy. You got more of a fighting chance in our game. Let's take a break, even with the high cost and that we have to endure. Back after a break, hour three at the races. Dale Day, the Dale Day, the voice of Remington Park. After this,
it's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Return hours of work in minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour 3, at the Races down to Oklahoma City. We